Good morning. It is so good to be here with so many friends. You know, some friends that I have had for a long, long time, some friends that are new friends to me, and you friends out there that are watching us from home. So we haven't forgotten about, well, we sort of have forgotten about you, but we're so grateful that you are here with us today, too. You know, as I get older, I find myself more and more kind of reflecting on how in the world did I get here? And I mean, I think that that's, and I don't mean just here, but how did I become the person that I have become and am still becoming, right? Because it's not kind of, there's not this ending point right now. None of us have arrived, sorry to tell you. But there's a lot more yet to come for all of us. And these I said I've been reflecting on it, but what's interesting is it's not like an intentional reflection. It's that these memories sort of come over me, kind of unbidden memories. And they're episodic, if you know what I mean. It's like a little slice of life. And I think it's really a very natural human thing to try to sort of make some kind of sense out of our lives. And that's usually through a story that we tell ourselves about what our life has been up to this point, and maybe with some hopes for the future. I can't speak for everybody, but I know for myself, I've sort of created this narrative, right, to make some sort of sense out of how I got where I am today. And I can't remember who said it. I came across it somewhere recently. They said, remember, the story of your life is not your life. It's just the story. And I kind of love that. But story is so important. Stories, the stories we tell ourselves, and unfortunately the stories that others tell us about ourselves, become this sort of sense of who we are. Why am I saying that? Because when I read the two scripture readings for today to get ready to preach, I read that beautiful section from Job, this description of God's majesty and the creation of the cosmos. And I just went, oh my goodness, I've got to go back and read Job. And it's pretty short. And it is the strangest and most wonderful story in what we call the Old Testament, the Hebrew Scriptures. So I sat down and I just got lost in it, right? And I read the whole thing and I was like, wow, that's just the craziest thing I've ever read. And then I read the Mark Gospel. And Mark is a pretty strange story in itself, strange and wonderful telling of the life of Jesus and his followers and the people that love him. And so I dove back into Mark, which is the shortest gospel. And I read all of Mark. And that brought a memory back to me. And that memory is, when I was in fourth grade, my parents loaded myself and my two brothers, there's three of us, into the 1960 Plymouth station wagon. It was called a Suburban. It had big wings. They loaded us into this car to go on a trip to California. It's the only trip that we ever took as a family of that sort of magnitude, and that was a big deal. And somehow, I think that my parents must have known that I was going to get really bored, so they bought me two books to take along for the ride, Tom Sawyer and The Jungle Books. And so in those station wagons, you know, they have what was referred to back then as the way back. You know what I'm talking about. I see a lot of you nodding your head. And for those who don't have any idea what that means, there were these big boat of a car, huge car, that had a luggage section, I suppose, in the back. It'd be kind of like if you took your Tahoe now and folded down the seat. But anyway, it was even bigger than that. Anyway, I crawled into the back of that car, and it was cold back there. We left right after Christmas, and the heater didn't seem to blow enough heat all the way to the way back. So I was curled up in a blanket, and I opened up Tom Sawyer, and I was transported. We drove through a blizzard, through Iowa, down through Kansas and over the Texas Panhandle, and it was blizzarding the whole time, and I didn't care because I had Tom Sawyer. And I got lost in that story. What an amazing story. Tom and Becky lost in the cave for, I don't know, days maybe? And then Tom tricking his buddies into painting the fence for him. The guy was brilliant. And after they come back from the cave, Tom and his friends crawl into the, I envision it to be kind of like a balcony at the back of the church to stay warm, and they fall asleep back there. And what do they wake up to? Tom's funeral. They've decided that Tom Sawyer and his friends aren't going to come back, so he gets to listen to his own funeral. Who wouldn't want to do that, right? But it was just magical. It just grabbed me, and then the Jungle Books. When I opened that, Mowgli, literally raised by wolves. What a great, great story. So anyway, reading these stories and being transported by them brought that back, this sort of episodic memory of just falling in love with story. And I still love story. And I love the two stories that were told today, the story from Job and the story from Mark. Okay, I'm going to go down another path here. Bear with me. When the staff here at St. John's a couple of months ago did an Enneagram session. Does anybody know what the Enneagram is? Raise your hand if you know what the Enneagram is. Okay, good. You're a one? What are you, Matt? Nine. Okay, so the idea is that the Enneagram, you take some tests. And depending on the results of the test, it types your personality, right? I think we all found it very useful, very interesting, and also, I think almost everyone who took the test went, oh, okay, yeah, I'm a number four, number six, whatever. That makes sense. And also there came with it just a smidgen of embarrassment too. Oh, I'm a four. Oh, I'm a five. Because this personality test, it shows you your strengths and it shows you your weaknesses, and they are usually entwined. Right, and I think that many of us can relate to the fact that what we view as our greatest strengths come with their own challenges and can be sort of our greatest weaknesses too. I say all this because it turns out I'm a number five on the Enneagram. So I rely on knowledge. I am fully invested in understanding how things work. And I think that along with that comes a measure of desire to control also. Book learning. I'm big on book learning. So because I loved stories so much, when it came time to go to college, I couldn't think of anything that was even remotely interesting to me to put 4 years into studying. So I realized, well, what do I love? I love stories. So I'm going to be an English major. And that ruined story for me. Because when I was in college in the early to mid 70s, critical theory was just like starting to blossom. And what was called the new criticism was old and was starting to die. And you don't have to know what any of that means other than the fact that what you do is you take a story or a poem or any piece of art and you very carefully dissect it to figure out how it works, which was attractive to me, and how to put it back together. But like I said, story was lost in this whole process. So I dropped out. I got bored, got discouraged, and dropped out. But the love of story has never left me. And probably a little bit of that critical eye has never left me either, which is why I love reading these scriptures and talking to you all about these scriptures. So we've got these two great stories here, right? We've got Job. Now, we kind of we fall into this story of Job. Dan read it so beautifully today with the authority and the voice of God, right? But we come into this late. Let me tell you what happens leading up to God actually coming and talking to Job. Job, much like, remember the rich man from last week's gospel, the rich young man that comes to Jesus and says, "Jesus, how do I get to the kingdom of God?" The rich young man had done everything right. He was righteous, he was wealthy, he was successful, and yet he was lacking something, right? And so he comes to Jesus. "Jesus, how do I do this? How do I get further in my spiritual life?" And Jesus says, it's very, very simple. Give away everything you own. Give everything you own to the poor and come and follow me. And the rich young man either can't or won't do that. Jesus gives him the option. He gives him the choice, right? You can either do this or not. The rich young man can't bring himself to do that. Job, however, also had done everything right. He was rich. He had 10 kids. I can't remember now, but he had a lot of kids who were also fabulously successful, whom he loved so much. And Job was not given the choice of give everything away and come follow me. It was all taken from him. All of his children died. All of his cattle died. All of his wealth disappeared, and Job was stripped bare. And Job was angry. Wouldn't you be? I would be. Job was so angry that he cursed his own life. He didn't only curse his own life, he even cursed the night that he was conceived. He was like, if there is rock bottom, he hit it and he fell through it. Then his friends come to comfort him and also to enlighten him. "Hey, Job, here's what you must have done wrong. Here's how you fell short, and you deserve everything you got." And Job called BS on that. Job said, "No, you don't know me. I did everything right, and still look where it got me." And Job railed against God. Job didn't curse God, but he railed against God and said, "God, how can you let this happen to a person like me?" for pages. This goes on. And then we come to that beautiful piece that's printed in your bulletins right now, where God appears to Job out of a whirlwind. And he doesn't explain to him, Job, here's what you did wrong. Here's why you ended up where you are. He just explodes in this incredible poetic description of the cosmos and of creation and of how everything in creation is intertwined, how it's both beautiful and terrible at the same time, and about how this cosmic order is greater than any individual in this cosmic order. Doesn't sound like a comforting message, does it? But somehow Job takes great comfort in this. Somehow Job's mind is changed because Job comes back with, paraphrasing here, yes, God, you're right. Now I understand. I still don't understand why I'm suffering, but I understand that your order, your cosmic order, is way greater than me and even way greater than all of the suffering that I'm going through. Job learned some humility there. Job learned his place within the cosmic order. And it wasn't quite as great a place as he had imagined it. Then, once Job comes to this understanding, everything is returned to Job. That's hard to explain, too. The point is, this story is inexplicable. We cannot explain it away. We can't say, this is why bad things happen to good people. We can only recognize that, yes, bad things do happen to good people. And that our stance needs to be one of humility. Which brings us to Mark and the story of James and John. James and John were, I don't know if they were wealthy, but they were definitely part of a family business. When Jesus finds James and John, the sons of Zebedee, working at, and I love that name, Zebedee, I could just say that over and over again. But when Jesus finds James and John mending their nets with their dad, he calls them to come follow him. And they do. They leave old Zebedee, got to say it again, they leave old Zebedee behind, and they go to follow Jesus. And man, they catch fire. They are ambitious for the reign of God. They want to know, what can I do to enter the kingdom? What can we do? And they were not only ambitious. Oh, by the way, Jesus renamed them. Does anybody know what he renamed them? The sons of thunder. Not the sons of Zebedee, but the sons of thunder, because they were bold. They were working for the kingdom. And there's even a great little story, a little piece of a story in there where Jesus and his followers, they go through this Samaritan town, and they're rebuked, they're cast off, they're canceled. And James and John, after they leave the village, they ask Jesus, hey, should we rain down fire on that village and wipe them out? And Jesus said, no, that's not going to do us any good. That's not going to do them any good either. So they're ambitious, they're loud, they are the sons of thunder. They got to go up onto the mountain with Jesus and witness the transfiguration. So it's no wonder that they had this spiritual ambition. Well, they also had this ego-driven ambition, didn't they, which we get to hear in today's story. Hey, Jesus, we've got a question for you. And Jesus says, in perfect character, what can I do for you? And they say, well, here's what you can do for us. You can sit one of us on your right-hand side, and you can sit one of us on your left-hand side, and we will be part of your glory. We want to be in your glory and with you. So they're ambitious professionally. I don't know if it was a profession. It was more of a avocation. But you can see what I'm getting at. They were ambitious egotistically. Sit us on your right hand. Sit us on your left hand. And Jesus says, that's not the way this glory thing works. It's not where you're sitting at the table. It's how you're serving at the table. That's a hard lesson, isn't it? I mean, because I think that it's for most of us, I know for me, I would like to be elevated a little bit. I would like to be recognized for all the good things that I do in the world. I would like to, my ego is alive and well. And whose isn't, right? This sort of this desire that we have for recognition and admiration is a very human characteristic. And I think today, with social media, I think it's very easy and very seductive to promote ourselves. It's free. It's available. Andy Warhol said that, and he didn't really say it, but it's attributed to him, that in the future, and the future is now, everyone will be world famous for 15 minutes. And that was prophetic. This is way before the internet. Everybody can be today famous for at least 15 minutes, even if everybody is disliking what you're saying. So James and John are delivered the opportunity for a measure of humility here in this story too. It's not about where you sit, it's about how you serve. Now, these and other stories like it have been used by the church to keep people quiet and to keep people small and to keep people down. It's not in the story, but the message has been turned into, don't be too loud. Don't speak your truth. Don't serve in magnificent ways. But that's not Jesus's message at all. This message isn't for those people like me who have a certain... No, this message is for people like me who don't have a certain amount of entitlement, a certain amount of privilege. This is a message for people like me to tone that ego down just a little bit if you can. It's not for the downtrodden. It's not for the marginalized people in the world, because Jesus was constantly holding them up. It's for people like me. Amen.